choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Salutations, greetings, and hello. My name is Stephen Briggs. I'm chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 169, Democratizing Disaster for 401k Investors. It's a hell of a title. Well, it happens to correlate with a recent executive order coming from President Trump, titled Democratizing Access to Alternative Assets for 401k Investors. Those of you who have listened to the podcast probably have a pretty good idea how I feel about this one. But I have to be rather frank about the matter. I see this as a robbery of the American people, a heist via 401k accounts. And let me explain where this heist is going to come from. I don't even have to explain it. That's the beauty of this. The executive order does. So I'm going to read through the executive order, and I want to provide annotation as we go through section by section of this thing, what this means to you, and what the point is. So, from the beginning, by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, it is hereby ordered. Section 1. Purpose. Many wealthy Americans and government workers who participate in public pension plans can invest in, or are the beneficiaries of investment in, a number of alternative assets. Yet, while more than 90 million Americans participate in employer-sponsored defined contribution plans, the vast majority of these investors do not have the opportunity to participate, either directly or through their retirement plans, in the potential growth and diversification opportunities associated with alternative asset investments. Let's break this one down. First off, many wealthy Americans can invest in or are the beneficiaries of investment in alternative assets. Other words, the rich people already bought up a bunch of junk. And by the way, what percentage of people currently hold alternative assets? Less than 1%, according to Goldman Sachs a handful of months ago. However, if you look at the state pension funds, you look at the endowments and trusts of the Ivy League schools, 35 to 65% of what they're holding are alternative assets. So I want us to think about this and go, well, does that mean that that assertion is correct? And I go, well, except those alternative assets aren't performing very well. In fact, Yale just had to unload 15 billion of them less than a month ago, and they did it at a 50% loss. These alternative assets have not been going great for those high and mighty folks. So as they're already laying out this thesis, the potential growth and diversification. Let's talk about diversification. If I have oatmeal, I love mixing stuff in my oatmeal. I have my oatmeal, and I have your brown sugar, you get your raisins, I like dried cranberries, and you get some walnuts in there, and you get some turds. Wait, why would anyone want turds in their oatmeal? Well, it's diversification. There's the potential for a new flavor. Yeah, Stephen, that flavor's crap. Yeah, I know. And so are alternative assets. But the potential growth and the diversification. I like Peter Lynch's word for this. Peter Lynch, by the way, was former head of Fidelity's Magellan Fund, had a multi-decade career posting very, very strong long-term returns. He refers to it as diversification. And I would agree. So we're going to give you the opportunity to diversify your investments. Okay, let's keep going. Quote, fiduciaries of 401k and other defined contribution retirement plans must carefully vet and consider all aspects of private offerings, including investment managers' capabilities, experiences, and effectiveness managing alternative asset investments. Let's stop there. The problem with private offerings is this. In most cases, you cannot examine the accounting. You cannot examine the profitability of the holdings. Hell, you can't even see what the holdings are because they're, wait for it, private. They're private. So you have to try, as a fiduciary, even someone like me, to sit here on the outside of this opaque box and go, yep, this is good. Yeah. Well, what about, you know, returns? And go, there are lots of really crappy bets that pay out. Go to Vegas. You'll see people hit one-outers all the time at the casino and bet big on it. They win. You know what most people do? Lose. Can you afford to lose in your retirement? Most people can't. They need that money, and they need that money for their future. Hopefully to live relatively peacefully. It's what most of our clients want to do. They just want to live a peaceful life, help the folks around them, and, you know, raise their kids or do whatever it is they're going to do. But this idea that we have some crystal ball that in the let's talk about investment manager capabilities, experiences, and effectiveness. Most of them are terrible. Most of them lose money. These old asset investment firms, hedge funds do not perform well, by and large. Are there a handful that do? Sure. Over what time frame? Uncertain. I have to admit, don't really care to dig much deeper into a problem that, frankly, is just, it's solved. It's because the game isn't about making you long-term returns. It's about making them fees. And you can look at it by their fee structures. In the case of like the Yale situation, the Ivies, some of those pension funds and whatnot, they're paying 3-4% a year in asset management fees to these companies to hold these alternative assets. Some of them use what's called a 2-20 mile, which is they get 2% plus 20% of the gain. So you get, let's say, you earn 10% in a year. They get 4% in fees out of that. Look at that growth. You do better than the S&P 500. Stick it in an index fund and call it a day. With hardly any or no fees. So why would we do this? They do so to protect the Americans whose retirement accounts they administer and for whom they have fiduciary duties to invest safely and prudently. Wait. Let's read all this yet again. Fiduciaries of 401k and other defined contribution retirement plans must carefully vet and consider all aspects of private offerings, including investment managers' capabilities, experiences, and effectiveness managing alternative asset investments. They do so to protect the Americans whose retirement accounts they administer and for whom they have fiduciary duties to invest safely and prudently. If you can't do the first part, then the second part doesn't matter. You can't vet these folks because they manage an opaque box, private. Oh, well, it's valued this. Well, who set a valuation on that business? Two bankers. That's it. There is no open market for it. There is no trading of that company. So you have to trust them. Yeah, that's going to work well. Just trust me. This company's worth $2 billion, I promise. Yeah, okay. I think not. Let's go further. During my first term, my administration issued a 2020 information letter recognizing that prudent federal action could encourage the proliferation of investment strategies under which a portion of retirement plan participants' interests are allocated to alternative assets, as is the case for institutional investors. Okay. Cute, but okay. We go on. You send a letter. Cool. That's an opinion. That's not fact, that is an opinion. Moving on. Burdensome lawsuits that seek to challenge reasonable decisions by loyal regulated fiduciaries and stifling Department of Labor guidance issued since my first term, however, have denied millions of Americans opportunities to benefit from investment in alternative assets. Such assets are increasingly large portion of are an increasingly large portion of the portfolios of public pension and defined benefit retirement plans and offer competitive returns along with diversification opportunities. Well, we're going to disagree on that. Competitive, my rear. More like, between the buildings that are in debt and in default, and these private equity companies that do not make money and owe debt and are in default. No. These guys are on the verge of a crisis is what they have. They have a private equity crisis going on. That's what's going on. And we're seeing more defaults. Moody's just reported in. More companies defaulting, and they're using various forms of synthetic and derivative debt instruments to keep kicking the can down the road. Remember, I warned you back in late 2024 when Goldman Sachs was pushing this junk to high yield savings account holders, including myself, talking about how you should get into the world of this. Well, it looks like our government's doing the same thing, trying to sell the American people up the creek, just like Goldman did with mortgage-backed securities in 06 and 07. It's the same damn scam. Same song, different verse, a little bit louder and a whole lot worse. Right here. Why? If it's such a good investment, why would they want to give any of it up? I've questioned this many times this year. Why would they want to give it up? Because they want to get you one last puff before the thing blows up. And unfortunately, he's in on it. They're in on it. I go on. Well, he goes on. I'm going to keep reading. A combination of regulatory overreach. I somewhat disagree. I agree with this. The Department of Labor has definitely lost some court cases it never should have gotten into. A combination of regulatory overreach and encouragement of lawsuits filed by opportunistic trial lawyers has stifled investment innovation and largely relegated 401k and other defined contribution retirement plan participants to asset classes whose returns lack the very same long-term net benefits allowed for and achieved by public pension plans and other institutional investors. It's just not true. Like, flat out, the vast majority of 401ks I look at a minimum, have an S&P 500 index fund. Straight up. And if you've been in the S&P 500 index for any length of time, let's talk about this. If you were in over the last 5 years, so you started at, during COVID, basically, and we're moving ahead, you're up 89%. You're up 89%. You're almost doubled your money in a 5-year span. It's like a 12-13% growth rate right there. If we were to go back, for example, and I'm pulling this data right live as I'm recording, of course, because that's what I do. But if we go back to 2015, I'm pulling from August 20, 2015 now. So over 10 years, you're up 220%. You've more than tripled your money. You've more than tripled your money in the last 10 years. If you invested $10,000 back, a decade ago, it's worth 30 now. It's actually worth more than that. It's worth about 32. What are we talking about here? The suggestion that that they lack the long-term net benefits of, achieved by public pension funds. Public pension plans have not done well. That's why a lot of them, most of them are underfunded. If they were doing well, they wouldn't be underfunded. And goodness, there's so much literature out there regarding the pension funds of Harvard and Yale and so forth. Those things have middled around, 6% or so? You're earning way more than that. Talk about, the missing out. I don't feel like I'm missing out. Lack the very same long-term net, and then you have fees on top of that. Oh, forget it. Yeah, you want, I don't feel like I'm missing out, folks. Sorry. Pool's nice and warm over here. Don't know what you're talking about. Unreal. Going on. My administration will relieve the regulatory burdens and litigation risk. Relieve the litigation risk, meaning if they screw you, they're not getting sued. Cool. The regulatory burdens and litigation risks that impede American workers' retirement accounts from achieving the competitive returns and asset diversification. There it is again. Diversification. How many times does this statement even use the word diversification? Four times. We're going to try to use the word diversification as if it's a benefit. As if we even understand what... Folks, being given an option that is terrible does not therefore make the solution set better. That's fucking unreal. Pardon me, sorry. That is unreal. My administration will relieve the regulatory burdens and litigation risks that impede American workers' retirement accounts from achieving the competitive returns and asset diversification necessary to secure a dignified, comfortable retirement. Or they could just build cash savings and, I don't know, invest broadly in the existing vehicles that work perfectly fine and capture the majority of growth in the U.S. economy. But what the hell do I know? Without paying all those fees, no less. Yes, here we are. But yeah, no, we need to do something. Yeah, okay. Section 2, policy. Okay. It is the policy of the United States that every American preparing for retirement should have access to funds that include investments in alternative assets when the relevant plan fiduciary determines that such access provides an appropriate opportunity for plan participants and beneficiaries to enhance the net risk-adjusted returns on their retirement assets. But there's no way, one, there's no way for a fiduciary to actually do that because the black box, the opaque box, is still an opaque box. Can't see in it. Nope, nope, nope. And on top of it, we're going to go through here. Most alternative assets, they're junk. They're nothing. There's something you just don't want to own because they really have no long-term value. And the moment people are not interested in them anymore, they don't exist anymore. Which, speaking of, Section 3. Democratizing assets, alternative assets. For purposes of this order, the term alternative assets means... All right, strap in. We're going to get a definition. What does alt assets mean to the White House? Number one. Private market investments, including direct and indirect interests in equity, debt, or other financial instruments that are not traded on public exchanges. Now, I'm going to tell you, not traded on public exchanges means, in the vast majority of cases, no need to report anything. No need to report balance sheets, no report profits and losses, there is no shareholder meeting, there are no questions answered. You don't get to know anything. No reporting requirements, no audit requirements, no audit requirements, no audit requirements. Including those where the managers of such investments, if applicable, seek to take an active role in the management of such companies. Oh, good. So this is not only here to prop up the bad pension funds, the various trusts and trust fund babies and so forth, but we're also gonna buy into these personalities that not only are buying this crap up, but boy, they're gonna go in there and they're gonna spearhead this stuff. Unreal. Unreal. Folks, I hope by this point you've done one of two things: either turn this podcast off or are really thinking deeply about this. It's a scam. It's a scam. Number two, direct and indirect interests in real estate, including debt instruments secured by direct or indirect interests in real estate. Shell companies. REITs. REITs with shell companies. All sorts of things that, again, you don't get to see what's under the hood. Just trust us. We'll make you money. Cool. In real estate? As we talk about, again, these commercial, one of the biggest areas where there's a whole lot of private equity debt that's about to collapse is commercial real estate debt. There have been multiple AAA buildings that have defaulted. In fact, there was a article from Bloomberg a bit ago that suggested that upwards of $100 billion, this is last year, $100 billion in commercial real estate is basically misrated by the ratings agencies, and that they are in much worse shape. People are not moving back into those buildings. Capacity is not just ramping back up. Nope. We live in a very different world when it comes to the footprint of the office, the footprint of the corporation, and no, it's not just going and refilling the space. Not happening. But they'd like you to believe that, and they'd like you to buy the junk that they're holding and not making money on. That's who's holding it right now. It isn't the common American people right now. Oh, no, no. Remember, who's holding it right now are those institutional investors and public. They're not lying about that. That's actually true. You're dead correct that the institutions and these private investors and these pension funds are the ones holding this crap. Dead correct. Does not mean you want to hold it too. Or for that matter, hold it, because who's going to sell it? If they're all the ones holding it, and they're selling it to you, or you're buying it from them. They're no longer holding it. This is a transfer of risk and a transfer of reward, in quotation marks. I think they'll let you have a couple of puffs from the pipe before the thing goes up. Much like they did in 06 and 07, those mortgage-backed securities, and Lloyd Blankfein is getting stared down by late Senator Levin of Michigan, browbeating him on it, and he's just sitting there all Charlie chuckles up out there on the Senate floor, or in committee, talking about, well, it's just, you know, these people, we sold it at the market price, and it's such a shame that it just didn't work out. What a Charlie Foxtrot that guy was. They'd love for you to buy their real estate, including their debt. I bet they would. Going on. Number three, holdings and actively managed investment vehicles that are investing in digital assets. Ah, so you want us to also buy your shitcoin and Ethereum? I said what I said. You heard me. That was not a mistake. You want us to buy your monkey NFTs? You want us to buy all that crap? That doesn't do anything. That causes blight on the environment and has no purpose. None. Stable coins, whatever. You don't need it. It doesn't do anything. It is literally, and anyone who wants to make the argument, oh, but it's decentralized, finance from the government. Oh, trust me, the government's had a perfectly capable of seizing Bitcoin. You think you're outside the law, you are mistaken. What also you're not outside of is theft. Tens of billions of dollars of theft, dwarfing how much ever gets stolen from people's homes. By orders of magnitude, way more in quote-unquote value of digital currency is stolen every year relative to actual break-ins in houses. We're all worried about our Ring cameras and stuff. These jokers are taking tens of billions of dollars. The only thing these vehicles are good for is sex trafficking, human smuggling in general, child smuggling, child sex trafficking, and guns and drugs. It's good for all those things. You want to be a part of that? I mean, you can already be a part. You don't even need to have that in your 401k to be a part of that crap if you want. That think that a fiduciary somehow should say, yep, this is prudent for my clients, this is me acting in their best interests, this is me managing their money and property carefully, this is me. Unreal. Going on. Number four, direct and indirect investments in commodities. At least those are traded on a commodity index. Probably the one thing, I mean, indirect investment, no. We don't need to have, again, more shell companies that you can't see anything. You want to throw a commodities fund in there, go for it. But here's the thing is, a fiduciary has that as an option already. There are a number of publicly traded commodities funds. Absolutely could pick those that they want. They can already do that. Indirect investment means, again, can't see inside the box. No, have no clue how a fiduciary would vet that. If you can't see the data, the answer is you can't. Number five, direct and indirect interest in projects financing infrastructure development. Muni bonds and muni bond funds already exist. And I'm not a big fan of munis. And the reason why I'm not a big fan of munis is because more and more they're defaulting. They're defaulting far worse than holding U.S. treasuries, and they don't pay out particularly well. If I want to get paid out more, I'm picking other assets than that relative to the risk. Because unfortunately, when they have a higher interest rate, it means you have a municipality that has a decent shot at defaulting and not paying out at all. And so, yeah, that flat out why we don't do that. But fiduciaries absolutely already have access to instruments that do that. Now, again, indirect interests. Once again, now we're talking back to hedge fund territory and various forms of pooled trusts that you can't see inside. Nope. And number six, lifetime income investment strategies, including longevity risk-sharing pools, annuities, which are already in here as well. And whatever other creative instruments they may try, which ultimately involves them collecting a big fee to facilitate that thing, and you not earning nearly as much as you may have with any of the other already existing options. So there's your list, 1 through 6, and it's all junk. But boy, we want you to have the opportunity to buy our junk. Then it goes on, the statement goes on, and one of the other things, yeah, we'll keep going here. B, within 180 days of this order, the Secretary of Labor shall re-examine the Department of Labor's past and present guidance regarding a fiduciary's duties under the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, that's ERISA, in connection with making available to participants an asset allocation fund that includes investments in alternative assets. When conducting this re-examination, the Secretary shall consider whether to rescind the Department of Labor's December 21st, 2021, supplemental private equity statement. So I went ahead and pulled that statement up. December 21, 2021, right available on the internet. This statement supplements the Department of Labor's June 3, 2020 information letter regarding the use of private equity investments in designated investment alternatives made available to participants and beneficiaries in individual account plans such as 401k plans subject to ERISA. The information letter stated that a plan fiduciary would not, in the department's view, violate the fiduciary's duties under Section 403 and 404 of ERISA solely by reason of offering a professionally managed asset allocation fund with a PE, private equity component, as a designated investment alternative subject to important conditions set forth in the letter, which probably had a framework regarding what that, you know, analysis would conclude. Rather, the information letter confirmed that, as with any plan investment, plan fiduciaries must determine that an investment that includes PE, private equity, is, among other things, prudent and made solely in the interest of the plan's participants and beneficiaries. That's duty of loyalty. That is a legal requirement. Not how much their fees, not what that company is getting kicked back. It must be in the interest of the participants and beneficiaries. And time again, this gets violated. That's a really, really big deal. And what the Department of Labor was saying in its letter is, if you include these things, it's got to hold up like every other investment. Now, what the letter does say later on, you go, okay, that doesn't seem too inflammatory. What's the beef with the White House? The answer to that is basically at the ending. The ending says, it is important to note that the information letter responded to concerns raised by the requesters about plan fiduciaries who offer both defined benefit and defined contribution plans and who may invest in PE for their defined benefit plans, but do not do so for the participant-directed individual account plans out of fear of liability. Note, that basically means the people making the most money get options that are riskier and potentially illiquid, loss of principal, more or greater chances of that stuff. So even the fiduciaries understand that this is probably not appropriate for most people, but we go on. A plan-level fiduciary that has experience evaluating PE instruments in a defined benefit pension plan to diversify investment risk may be suited to analyze these investments for a participant-directed individual account plan, particularly with the assistance of a qualified fiduciary investment advisor. The department cautions against application of the information letter outside of that context. Notice how he said that, participant-directed individual account plan, i.e. not for the broad group. not for the whole company. Moreover, the department cautions against application of the information alert outside of that context, except in this minority of situations. Plan-level fiduciaries as small individual account plans are not likely suited to evaluate the use of PE instruments in designated investment alternatives and individual account plans. The department further notes that ERISA Section 404C does not relieve a plan fiduciary of the prudence duties that apply to the selection and monitoring of designated investment alternatives, investment managers, and investment advice service providers. Other words, the vast majority of people that are required to look at this stuff have no way of knowing whether anything that has been listed in the president's executive order here would satisfy their fiduciary responsibility. They don't have the tools, they don't have the resources, they don't have the visibility regarding it. And even if you gave them tools, I mean, again, if you're giving them, saying, oh, here are returns in our opaque box, even someone as skilled as myself has no chance, because we don't know what you're holding, so we don't know if we can believe it, or that we can believe that what you're doing is sustainable. You have a couple of good years, that doesn't mean it's a sustainable investment strategy. Doesn't mean that it's, again, you can get lucky over a year, over a couple of years. And again, and even producing longer term returns, again, does not mean that you have a process that is consistent or better than anything else that's being currently invested in. So when they're sitting there and saying, we're considering rescinding the letter, it's because of that last paragraph that basically says the vast majority of people who evaluate this stuff have no chance. So no, it's probably not prudent, except maybe on an individual level, maybe. Oh. Within 180 days of this order, the secretary shall further, as the secretary deems appropriate and consistent with applicable law, seek to clarify the Department of Labor's position on alternative assets in the appropriate fiduciary process associated with offering asset allocation funds containing investments in alternative assets under ERISA. Such clarification must aim to identify the criteria that fiduciaries should use to prudently balance potentially higher expenses against the objectives of seeking greater long-term net returns and broader diversification of investments. You know what? The DOL has already done that for you. It's simple. The vast majority of this, it's like sitting there going, well, let's see if this, in a pool full of sharks, if what you're holding is a goldfish. Like, really? And that's supposed to be pushed back on HR, and that's supposed to be pushed back on the small business owner. That's supposed to be pushed back, again, with opaque boxes floating around. The secretary shall also propose rules, regulation, or guidance, as the secretary deems appropriate, that clarify the duties that a fiduciary owes to plan participants under ERISA when deciding whether to make available to plan participants an asset allocation fund that includes investments in alternative assets, which rules, regulations, and guidance may include appropriately calibrated safe harbors. Propose rules, clarify duties. Other words, we're going to rewrite what a fiduciary is so everything can come in. We're going to tell you that fiduciary doesn't mean anything. Because fiduciary, by any standard, as we went through the whole list, there's no way. There's no way anyone who has to be legally responsible and financially culpable for screwing this up is going to make those things available unless they're shielded by law from the consequences. So that's what they plan to do. In order to peddle their crap, they have to protect the people that are going to be shilling it out. So that's what that means. In carrying out the directives in this section to further the policy set forth in this order, the secretary shall prioritize actions that may curb ERISA litigation that constrains fiduciaries' ability to apply their best judgment in offering investment opportunities to relevant plan participants. And we're going to shield you from legal action so you can go and rob these people. We are going to rob their 401ks. We're going to raid them for private equity. And it is literally being sponsored in this executive order. We're going to take away... curb ERISA litigation means they can't defend you, the investor. That's the Department of Labor being shackled so that they can't go after the government in court and hold them accountable when this stuff lights up like a torch. We want you to buy into this area. We're going to make these people a pile of money. And then when this stuff collapses, you can't sue. Because we're going to make it illegal to do it. That's what that says. That's what this thing says. We're going on. In carrying out the directives in this section, the Secretary shall, as appropriate, consult with the Secretary of the Treasury, the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, and other federal regulators as necessary to carry out the policy objectives of this order, including as to parallel regulatory exchanges that may be incorporated by such other federal regulators. Okay, let's keep going here. So we're also going to make sure that the people that could step in, apart from the Department of Labor, are going to work in lockstep with the administration, work with regulators to not regulate, and to basically cede legal protections for investors to these private equity firms, to these annuity companies, to these people peddling junk. Finally, bullet point E, the SEC shall, in consultation with the Secretary, consider ways to facilitate access in alternative investment assets by participants in participant-directed defined contribution retirement savings plans. Such facilitation may include, but not be limited to, consideration of revisions to existing SEC regulations and guidance relating to accredited investor and qualified purchaser status to accomplish the policy objectives of this order. In other words, there are rules currently in place for what a qualified investor is, meaning someone who can basically be approached with much riskier, potentially very junky investment. And basically, there are financial criteria and or professional criteria that have to be met in order for you to be qualified enough to participate in these much more risky instruments. You have to have net worth over $1 million, excluding primary residence, income over $200,000 individually, or $300,000 with spouse and partner in each of the two prior years, and reasonably expects the same for the current year. You can also be, if you have various forms of securities licenses, you would also be accredited by definition. And there are other ways to be accredited, but the big ones typically are net worth over $1 million, excluding house, income over $200,000 individually, or $300,000 as a couple for the last couple of years. And they're basically saying, we want to open that up where anyone, regardless of their savings or lack thereof, can participate. This one I am not as opposed to. I am a fan of it's your money and it's your responsibility and your opportunity to make decisions. However, I am opposed to having various forms of products, in quotation marks, on the market where you don't get all the information necessary to make an informed decision. When they go, trust our black box, that's not good enough. That's not acceptable. That is an issue. That is an issue, no matter what is being proposed or not, what have you, that's a problem. And so they want to go in and they want to either rescind or lower those numbers or whatever for what might consider qualification. Now, granted, $200,000 individually, $300,000 spouse and partner, those are high numbers. Those used to be much larger. Those haven't changed in a long time. So that used to be your top, like, half of 1% or 1% of the population when that regulation came into play. That now encompasses, I would say, probably top 5% or so of the population. It's expanding annually because as salaries go up and the bar doesn't move, more people are becoming accredited, would be considered accredited investors by definition. So, again, lowering the boom on that in and of itself isn't terrible, but making it so they have all the sell side has all the information and the buy side doesn't have information the same information is not okay. So if they're going to move that direction, then SEC regs need to also move in the direction of providing the information necessary to make a fiduciary decision. They probably won't, though, because look at the rest of what they just spelled out. They just spelled out that we're not interested in protecting the investor whatsoever, and we are willing to go so far as to strip rules and regulations and or just simply not enforce things in order to carry this credo out. Section 4, general provisions. Nothing in this order shall be construed to impair or otherwise affect, one, the authority granted by law to an executive department or agency or head thereof, or, number two, the functions of the director of the Office of Management and Budget relating to budgetary, administrative, or legislative proposals. B, this order shall be implemented consistent with applicable law and subject to the availability of appropriations. C, this order is not intended to and does not create any right or benefit substantive or procedural enforceable at law or in equity by any party against the United States, its departments, agencies, or entities, its officers, employees, or agents, or any other person. D, I love this one. The cost for publication of this order shall be borne by the Department of Labor. We're just going to make sure to stick it to the DOL one more time right at the end. Donald J. Trump, the White House, August 7, 2025. So let's recap. What a piece of junk. They know that this list of assets, alternative assets, is crap. There's loads and loads and loads of data showing how investments in the vast majority of the things listed here have very high risk, have very little information available to investors to even evaluate that risk, let alone plan fiduciaries, have severe risks of not just loss, but permanent loss of principal. And that these things somehow are supposed to also be prudent and that fiduciaries should be able to include them more freely. And we are going to rewrite the rules in such a fashion that they can feel comfortable doing that because they won't be able to get sued because, well, we gave you a choice. And I've warned already for a while now about the Jenga that is occurring in the private equity space. The fraud that essentially exists when you have a so-called decentralized currency where 60 to 100 counterparties hold the vast majority of the assets, and I mean the ultra majority of the assets, where the way blockchain works, if anyone were to achieve a majority of those holdings, could essentially write you out of existence and out of ownership of your stake in the ledger. That the technology itself is not good for that purpose, that those assets don't do anything, that there are, in some of these more legitimate ideas, like buying into commodities or the option of getting into infrastructure development, munis and treasury bonds and commodity funds, they already exist. So the stuff here that one might actually have a reasonable case to make, granted, I'm not a fan of the investment classes, but they at least are a thing. There are already publicly traded companies and indexes for this stuff that you can research, that a fiduciary can research. That in some cases we already see in 401ks. You want to open that up? Fine. But all the junk here in the name of diversification and in the hopium of chasing returns is not in the best interest of clients. Plain and simple, especially if you're charged with managing a pool of investments for a large group of people with a variety of different backgrounds. There's no way this works. There's no way this is okay. And who's going to hold the bag when people buy into this stuff thinking, hey, this has been vetted. Look at the White House supporting this stuff. Look at my employer supporting this stuff. And then the thing lights in a ball of flame because all that bad debt just went up. And these companies went under. There are plenty of private equity companies going under in tech right now. There are plenty of buildings that are being sold at massive losses. Lots of that going on right now. But they're very happy to hand that risk to you through your retirement. Where most people, they're not looking that closely at this. I mean, they may look at seeing the value, but without the resources and without the bandwidth necessary, you have unfairly matched a very sophisticated, complicated, opaque, and frankly, not that good of an investment strategy to people who may or may not have the background to evaluate that in any reasonable form, either the plan fiduciary or the individual. But boy, those fund managers are, and those annuity backers, they're gonna get their fees from you. They are gonna feed you. You're gonna feed them so damn full with your money. They are so thankful for this. To which I'll just say, be awfully, awfully, awfully careful. If and when your 401k adopts changes, be very, very hesitant. And do a lot of homework when it comes to what you may include or decide not to include in your own investments as you see potentially different options in your 401ks in future years. Maybe. I imagine a number of 401k providers will look at that and go, well, that's cool, but we're not playing. That's wise. But there's a fair amount of, it turns out there's lots of greed in our industry. So many won't. And so you're going to have to be real careful moving ahead because that this is coming down and that they're stripping the legal protections for investors, the legal via the ability of the Department of Labor to protect you through ERISA. That is a structural weakness that will take a very long time to resolve if it actually goes through. That is my feeling on the my opinion. On the recent presidential action, the recent executive order democratizing access to alternative assets for 401k investors, I stand by my title. I think they're democratizing disaster. On that note, I want to thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money is Personal. I hope you catch all 168 other episodes on our website, BriggsWealth.com. Obviously, follow us on the Facebook page, like us, follow us, share our stuff. And then the last thing is that if you're running into something you're not sure what you're looking at, get a hold of a financial planner. Consider getting someone on your side that is not going to directly benefit from whether you pick A or B. Do a lot of homework. If you don't know what you're buying, don't buy it. I'll just tell you, it's going to be caveat emptor out there. Buyer beware as we head into this next phase of what retirement savings will look like. With that, my name is Stephen Briggs. I'm Chairman and CEO. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your week. Be safe, be well. And we'll catch you with a fresh episode next week. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data for making financial or investment decisions and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as a financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and/or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.